Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Well, welcome everybody to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler. Excited to be here with you. You know what it is? It's April 16th. Woo! How are you guys doing? It's been exciting to have tax day over. Now, tax season's not over, you know. I'd probably say 60% of our clients extend. Gives us time to strategize and get their books done and all that good stuff. You know, I've been talking about it for a few weeks. Extending is not a big deal. So tax season is still going on, but oh my gosh, feels so good to have April 15th over. And I just want to give a huge shout out to our team. It's just unbelievable what they do every year. I can't say enough. I'm not going to go through the list of names of our office members who work so hard and tirelessly day and night for several weeks leading up to April 15th. It's a big push, and grateful to them. And thank you to all of you that are clients of ours that have kind of stuck it out during tax time. I know it's a little hectic. Some of you may have gotten some last-minute emails here and there. It's busy. We appreciate your understanding with that. So thank you. And for all you new listeners out there, welcome. Welcome to the show. This is all about saving taxes, building wealth, living the American dream, asset protection, making it happen. I'm your host, Mark Kohler, a CPA attorney, author, entrepreneur, and just a family guy. And hey, and I've got a new surf video I just threw out there. I got to get on Facebook while we're talking, you know, if you're on the show. See, I've gotten a few comments. I need to give a little feedback there. I'm excited. But if you got the newsletter today, you saw the little link to YouTube on my new surf video. That's kind of my passion, is when I can break away for a couple hours in the evening once a week and just head out to the ocean, and it's a good time. So it's good times, good times. Anyway, it was crazy this week. That actual surf video, I want to throw this out. That was one session. I had my little GoPro on my surfboard, and my son downloaded it. He's like, "Oh, Dad, there's some good footage here. We got to do a surf video." So I'm like, "All right." So he found some public domain music that sounded good. But anyway, when I was paddling in that night, it was almost dark. I like to surf until sunset. It's almost dark, and paddling in, and there's a sea lion, this huge sea lion just like comes rolling right in front of my surfboard. When I was only like in like, I don't know, two or three feet deep water, it was really crazy. It was just blew me away. You know, sometimes you see the dolphins and different sea animals going to kind of cruise around while you're out there in the water, and it's a little unnerving. Since there has been a great white shark or two filmed out there in San Onofre, so it can be unnerving. But anyway, so decided to throw that out, little tidbit there. So if you haven't caught that little video, excited about today's show. So anyway, let's get on to the topic hand. I've got a special guest with us today. So excited to hear from Randy Lubke. He's a financial advisor. I'll go through the whole list of his credentials. They're amazing. And I wanted to talk about just good financial planning, basics, tips, strategies. We're going to hit some high-end stuff. We're going to hit some basic stuff. And I just don't talk about financial planning enough. I know I'll be honest, I kind of lean towards real estate a lot. I think maybe it's because I don't think enough people put money in real estate, but I never mean you put everything in real estate. So I'm really excited to have him on the show to talk about just good financial basics, good things we should be doing to build our wealth and be careful. So that's going to come up here at the bottom of the hour, and I'm looking forward to that. I think it's going to be good. So I want to hit a couple other things here before we get to our one of our tipsters today. I think I've only got one of our lawyers, Lee Chen, that's going to join us. He's co-authored an article on my blog this week. I think we'll bring that up and talk about it here on the show a little bit. Unless whatever he wants to talk about, he's the expert with the tip. So we'll have him here in just a moment. Join us. But I wanted to hit two topics on my newsletter today. I got a little feedback, not bad, but I got a little feedback via email. If you read my weekly message, hopefully many of you listening, if you haven't signed up for the newsletter, please do. But in the weekly message, I talked about the difference between men and women when it comes to business. And of course, this is a touchy topic because anybody that knows me knows that I can stick my foot in my mouth quite quickly, and I'll offend someone. So I try to be as politically correct as possible. But there are differences. People, there are differences. When I speak to a women's group versus a men's group, or I once gave a speech about this topic, and it was very unnerving because I knew I would offend someone. But what I highlighted in the newsletter today, and I think men, you can learn from the ladies here. And ladies, there's a little tip here for you to learn from the men. So everybody put down your guard for a minute. So here's what I wanted to mention. When I see business owners, when I'm talking to a woman business owner, I go at it very differently than a man business owner. And same thing. I take a different approach. What happens with the men, I'll pick on them first, is men tend to, once they get their business plan, get their idea going, this is just in general, that men will work hard, they'll be very focused, and they're going to try to get this business project off the ground. But if they don't see success as soon as they had hoped, as soon as they expected, there is a tendency that the man will give up on the project maybe a little earlier than the woman. I'll come to her in just a moment. Men tend to be a little more flighty. If the idea isn't coming together, they'll make changes maybe quicker than they should rather than letting the project materialize and give it some time, give it some seasoning, let the project come together. And I think men could do a better job of staying with it. Now, this isn't all characteristics. I know there's many men out there that are diehards. They're never going to give up, which is the other problem. But men can oftentimes give up too quickly with a project, and rather than letting it simmer a little bit. Sometimes simmering can bring out the best flavor or the best, result in the long run by giving it some time. One quick example, just from my own perspective, I've been very flighty with a little business ideas my whole life, but one thing when it comes to even real estate, just as an example to get back to that, some people go to a weekend or a workshop in the summer or fall, and then by the next year, if they're not making money in real estate, well, real estate's not for me. Real estate's bad. It's not good. It's not going to work. Whoa, slow down. I've said many times that it took me 11 years of school to become a tax lawyer, and then I spent another 10 years figuring it out and getting good at it. I know, ladies, I look a lot younger than that, but it's taken a while, 20 years, to try to become a good small business tax law advisor. Well, are we going to learn real estate or any small business in 6 months? It takes time, and we've got to be careful. We've got to have a safety net. So men, don't give up too early. Now, ladies, on the flip side here, what I see oftentimes with the other gender is that women will sometimes stay on with a project way too long. They get emotionally attached. They're like, I can't give up on this idea. I know it'll work. This is my lifelong dream, and blah, blah, blah. And, and they'll hold on too long. They won't give up on a project. And I think, too, that, of course, men, we don't give things enough time to simmer sometimes. And ladies, sometimes it's time to cut bait. We beat the dead horse. It's not going to work. Now we're wasting our time and money. And the solution to all this, right, my solution in trying to find this balance, men and women, is that I mentioned this in my book, What Your CPA Isn't Telling You. I talk about it in my book, Lawyers Are Liars, in the captain section. And I mentioned it to you in the newsletter. And that is, I want to challenge all of you to have a small board of advisors, a little board of advisors. And I'd like you to have men and women on that board. Now, what a board of advisors is, it could be officially documented in your LLC minutes. It could be a board of board of directors in a typical corporation and would be documented in your minutes. And I think we'll talk a little bit about that later here with Lee Chen on his blog article and what Holly Butterfield does in our office. But you can document this in your corporate book, but at the bare minimum, have 4 to 5 people that you take out to dinner, maybe once every 3 months, and talk about your business. Folks, I just got emotional just saying this. I know I'm a cheesy guy, but think of these 4 or 5 people that are going to give you advice from the heart, and you've got to have tough skin and tell them what's going on in your business. These are people that should be your cheerleaders. They should be rooting for you, and they should see you and want you to not be making mistakes. And these people could be old or young, but I want to encourage you to have both male and female. Guys, don't have 5 buddies and go out and watch a football game at the bar and have wings and think that's a board of directors meeting. That's not cutting it. And then ladies, don't take all your girlfriends and go get a manicure and hang out and go to lunch and say, oh, I had my board of directors meeting. I want you to practically get 4 to 5 people around a quiet dinner, maybe host a little barbecue at your house, turn off the TV, turn off the distractions, sit down and say, let me tell you where my business is going. I called you all here for your advice. Give them a gift. Give them, of course, free dinner or lunch. And talk about your business. Am I going in the right direction? Do I need to let this simmer longer? Do I need to cut bait? Our businesses should have multiple facets of revenue streams. How many products, how many services am I providing? What does my website look like? What do my newsletters look like? What do my sales material look like? Am I providing the product people want to buy? Is it priced accordingly? What do you think of my employees? What do you think about turnaround time? La, 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 la. Bring this up. Bring it up with your board of directors, board of managers, whatever you want to call them, your brain trust. To quote... So I Married an Axe Murderer. This is the pentablet. This is these 5 people that control everything. Anyway, and the colonel and his wee bitty eyes. Anyway, no, I'm just joking. Sorry, it's an 80s selection. Anyway, so here's the thing. Get your group, whoever they are, and just talk about this. Get them around a table. So there, my friends, is my suggestion today. That is my tip about how you can better succeed, how you can change the direction of your business so you're making more money, spending time with the people you love and doing the things you want to do. And that's our goal here, right? So let's try and give it a shot. All right, one other quick announcement, and then I want to bring Lee Chen, our expert today, on for his little tip that he may have for us. Folks, this is an important announcement. Please mark your calendar. You know on my radio show, I do not get salesy, so I'm just going to quickly say this. I have started my 2013 SWA, that's called the Strategic Wealth Alliance, webinar series. Now, what I'm doing this, it's not a flat fee, and then there's 12 webinars. I have now just, because it was so hard for everybody to, when am I starting the webinar, and when do I quit, and if I miss one, it's recorded, and yada, yada. So here's what I've done. This is for everybody out there. To help you succeed better, I have a monthly webinar where I turn on my webcam, I show you my computer screen, and I go over a new topic every month in depth with just you and me answering questions, coaching the people on the call on that particular topic. It's under $20 a month. And I've done 2 seasons of the Strategic Wealth Alliance, had over 200 people the last year on the Wealth Alliance. Not one person asked for their money back. The testimonials were amazing. Please check it out. Sign up for a month. It's every month. This month, it starts on April 30th, is my first webinar. They're all recorded. You get access to the prior webinars. So long as you're part of the webinar series, you'll always have access to the prior webinars that are recorded. And I hit the hottest tax, asset protection, and business strategies every month. And you can save up your questions. And folks, this could be the chance to save you a little bit of money by just coming with some of the questions particular to that topic every month for under $20. Put your family on the computer screen. Bring them around, huddle up. It's going to be in the evenings, and it's every month. Now, I've done this for a year. This is not a new thing. This is not some new idea of mine. This is something that's been tested and proven with 100% customer satisfaction over the last year. And so I want to encourage all of you to check it out. And you can go to my newsletter and sign up right at the newsletter. It's sort of the first heading right before the upcoming tax deadlines. You can go to my website, markjkohler.com, and click on the SWA, Strategic Wealth Alliance icon. I'll probably send around an email to all of you that get my newsletter tomorrow or the next day, encouraging you to sign up too. But I know it will pay off. And you can cancel anytime. Cancel anytime if you don't like it. But as long as you're involved, you get access to everything. And I say this from the bottom of my heart. Please, this little investment of time and money every month to focus on your business could pay dividends in thousands of dollars and thousands of hours not wasted. So please come. I put my guts on the line every time I do a webinar. And I come with fresh content, and it's live. Okay, well, I'm excited now to bring out our regular contributor to the show. He's awesome. Thomas, I love looking at you on the chat line. You're awesome. Your little Mike Myers, he appreciated that. He knew that I was quoting So I Married an Axe Murderer, a classic. And I said it was an 80s throwback because I'm an 80s guy, but really, So I Married an Axe Murderer was a movie in the 90s, and is good stuff. And Thomas was a part of my last webinar series. He said they're pretty good. Come on, Thomas, you can't throw down something better than that. Anyway, he said they're completely worth the time and money spent, so that was good. Another comment on the chat line real quick before I bring Lee out. Another question was, what are the typical topics on the webinar series? Well, what I bring up is what people are asking for. Now, I have a list of the next 12 webinars, and these are my hot topics. I have a whole webinar night on just auto, a whole webinar night on self-directing, a whole webinar on estate planning. So when you come to one of my live events, I kind of break the day down into about 8 to 10, 12 topics. So I start the webinars with those. And then I usually at the end of each webinar, I kind of do open mic. So for the last 10 to 15 minutes of every webinar, I just take standard questions. So it's kind of open forum. It's nice. I really do consider it to be highly coaching in a sense that you know, it's live. It's not recorded if you're able to listen in live. But it is recorded for those that miss it. But anyway, the topics are awesome. And if there's a topic you guys want me to cover, bam, we'll do it. I do a whole night just on asset protection. So it's good stuff. And there's a list at the website of those. Okay, so Thomas says he has very high standards, and Mark reaches them. Oh, you're nice. You're a stud, dude. Okay, all right. So let's jump over here. I want to bring out Lee Chen. He's the man, the myth, the legend, who I do want to say, you know, now for those who don't know him, he's an attorney. He runs our law office in Southern California. I kind of run the accounting side. We're down the hall from each other. And Lee just had a huge win in court this last month. We're so excited for him. He's a lover and a fighter. It's funny, I've had some clients come to me and say, Lee is so nice, but then we went to court with him. Oh my gosh, that guy's amazing. And anyway, I was just so grateful and flattered to have him on our team. He's been with us for 2 or 3 years now, and we just love him. Lee, welcome to the show, man.
Hello, Mark. It's good to be back. It's been a while. I've been out fighting some battles, so it's nice to be back and actually try to help people build their wealth as opposed to fighting about it. So it's nice to be back on.
You bet. I know you kind of get that balance where one phone call could be a nasty fight and the next one could be, win. So now, are you talking about your blog article today, or did you have a different topic for us?
Well, I had something different, and it kind of goes into what you were talking about with your team and building, your board and stuff like that. What we've been getting a lot with the economy, you know, getting back together and people, you know, getting back into their doing their own business and starting partnerships and stuff like that. We're getting a lot of people asking about, well, I want to start this partnership, but how do I protect what I'm bringing into the table? So I want to talk a little bit about protecting your assets when you go into a partnership.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, so as you've said a lot, having just a simple clause that says, "Well, you won't compete with me," those are very difficult to enforce, okay? Just having that one non-competition clause in some sort of contract is probably not going to fly. What we want to do when you are thinking about going into a business, and let's say you have a client list, or you have a vendors that you work with, or a team that you want to bring into the partnership, you want to put it down in writing that you are identifying these contacts, these customers, if you have a trademark. If you have a design or some sort of strategy, you want to make it in writing that that is confidential information and make sure it's widely disseminated to the people that you're going to be doing business with.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Now, this is interesting. I want to just insert this. Folks, if you're listening here, this is a very common question I have that comes across my email. In fact, I had one 2 days ago. Client was actually, it was, they were urgent, and I felt so bad because it was April 15th, and I couldn't help them out in an urgent way. But they said, "Mark, I've got a presentation I'm making to someone on a business idea, and I want them to sign a non-disclosure, non-compete." Lee, what do you think about that? Say I am going to propose an idea to someone, and I'm saying, "Hey, I want to partner with you. Here's a real estate project I'm doing. Here's a small business I'm doing. But I want you to sign this beforehand, and if so, you can never do it." What are your thoughts on those?
Well, I don't know that you can say never do it, but you can place some reasonable limitations. And one of the reasons that brought this to my mind was I had a client recently come in. She had a great idea that related to wedding planning. She had a great product that when people saw it at the wedding, they're like, "Oh my God, that's a great product. I love it. I love it." And she went into business with some other people, and she didn't register a trademark. She didn't have them sign any agreements. They took that whole thing, and now they're squeezing her out. And all it would have taken was a little bit of, documentation and discussion beforehand before you introduce that idea. And I felt so bad. She was the creator of the idea. She originally designed it. She brought it to the market, and now she's being squeezed out of her own product.
Wow. Well, okay, so let's think. Now, I love an example here, but we don't have, this isn't the focus of the entire show, so we're going to wrap it up here shortly. Our guest is on the line, so I want to precursor that because Lee, you and I could go on forever. I love this. So let me ask you this. What should have she done differently? So what, if you were in her shoes in retrospect, what would you told her to do?
Number one, she has to have some agreements and set forth that the fact that this whole thing is confidential in writing, whether it's having a policy manual, whether it's having confidentiality agreements, non-disclosure, non-solicitation agreements. She needed to do that beforehand before she introduces it to the, the other people.
Okay. Now, and it's enforceable.
Yes,
I mean, you can
absolutely.
enforce that.
There's limits on it, and another thing that you have to do in putting in writing is not enough. You have to treat it as confidential, as private. So, you can't just say, "Well, this formula is going to be confidential," but then let everyone else have it. You have to also, your writings have to match your practices. And when you are doing your business, if it's a database, you have to have password protection. You have to, information's got to be secure as well. So, have it in writing and have practices, policies that demonstrate that it's a confidential, private matter. That's what's going to help you to protect it.
Okay. I like it. Now, those agreements don't have to be difficult. We can send out a rough draft of something like that for probably free. Someday we'll have downloadable forms on our site. We're working in that direction. But it's good to have it reviewed. Maybe spend 20 minutes with you, Lee. You can walk people through those limits. I mean, and usually in a half hour to an hour maximum, people can have a document they can use over and over again as part of their business plan.
Yeah, it's a common document. The only thing we have to do is identify exactly what they're trying to protect and incorporate it into the document. That's really the challenge. And then how do we implement policies that are reasonable to protect it?
Okay, I like it. Okay. Well, great comments. I love it. Good stuff. And if anybody remembers, I think it was 2 to 3 weeks ago, we did our show on how to partner with others and how to raise money and different ways to partner. And I had Matt Sorensen on the show. Please review that. I know that many of you are regular listeners, so you remembered already. But this non-disclosure, confidentiality, partnership agreement, letter of intent, all these different terms that are thrown out when you're in the preliminary stages, so important to protect yourself from getting bamboozled, by someone that's going to treat you unfairly. Well, Lee, thank you. How do people get a hold of you, Lee? What's the best way to get you?
They can call our office, 888-801-0010, or you can email me directly. My email is Lee, L-E-E, at KKOS lawyers.com.
Okay, that's Lee, L-E-E, at KKOS lawyers.com. And we'll kind of be looking forward to you. Lee, I was going to make a bad joke there, but I'm going to leave it alone. So I'm trying to find that balance. My wife says that, Mark, whenever you think it's going to be a little too colorful of a joke, don't do it. I said, okay, I won't do it. So that's her number one advice for me doing a show, if you guys did not. Lee, you're set. Thank you so much. We'll see you in a few weeks. Thanks, Lee.
Thank you. I think I should be talking to Jen about my bad jokes as well. So thank you, Mark.
Yeah. She's a good filter. I'll trust me. She's sick. She saved me many at a time at a dinner party. Okay. Well, all right. Well, folks, one other side note, quickly. We didn't get to it, but I want to mention it. We talked, I mentioned Lee's blog article that he co-authored with me. That was in the newsletter today. This is titled Piercing the Corporate Veil and Protecting Yourself. It's a great article. It's a little legally, I mean, it's not real sexy with, save $1,000 in taxes here or there. But what's beautiful about it is it gives you the basics you need to do so that your corporation or LLC protects you the way you envision it. I have so many people that set up an entity and then they go, oh, I got a piece of paper here. I got an LLC or I got a corp. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Just having the filing done at the state and a piece of paper in the drawer, and I know many of you can't find that piece of paper, talk about company maintenance. Get it done. Talk to Holly Butterfield in my office. She can knock out your company maintenance every year, your minutes, get your board of advisors put together. But check out that article. It's in on my blog at markjkohler.com. You can get to it through KKOS Lawyers. You can. I have another article there on how incorporating in Delaware and Nevada can hurt you. You guys that are followers of mine know that that's a huge topic of mine. And then I threw down a few little videos there. I've got my surfing video. I got a, what is it, DAFT, the DAPT, Domestic Asset Protection Trust, and how to write off auto expenses. I'm trying to knock out 2 or 3 videos a week. They're easy to do, and I've got my little video production crew from my son that's graduating from high school this year, headed off to college. He's getting so good with videos, and I just want to watch that surfing video again. So cool. Okay. All right. Well, now I am going to bring out our amazing guest today and a topic that I'm really excited to cover. We haven't covered it in a long time, so do not put down your phone. Don't turn off your computer. Turn off your iPod. Plan on going for another. Jeff, I know you're running on a treadmill out there. Stay on that treadmill. You can do it. Stick with it. You run another 4 miles and listen to this next topic. We are going to bring on the line now Randy Lupke, who is a, get this, I thought I had a lot of letters behind my name. He's a registered financial consultant, registered mortgage advisor, a life insurance agent, a real estate broker, a mortgage broker, a stock broker. I think his letters go on way beyond mine, behind my name. And he's been an educator in the financial services industry for more than 25 years, funded nearly $1 billion in home loans, nearly $1 billion in home loans over the last 25 years, and helped scores of people with their retirement planning and how to be better stewards of their money. So I'm really excited to bring him out here onto the show. He's just has a ton of info. Randy, welcome, man. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Mark. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. This is, it's been long and, you know, in the coming. We should have had you here a lot longer ago. So I'm grateful you found some time for us. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Yeah, looking forward to it. So how do we want to start this, Mark? Where do we want to start out with this conversation today?
Well, you bet. You just sit back and relax, dude. We got everybody listening. We're just excited to just kind of tap into your aura of, you know, knowledge here. So I had a question for you that I wanted to ask. This is something you and I have talked about before, over lunch before, and I think there's a lot of my followers or listeners want to know this too. So I'm going to start out with a general question here. How do you find a balance between real estate investing and the financial planning world? And let me say this, let me give a precursor here. I think most of us feel that a stockbroker is not an advocate of real estate. They don't think about real estate. They don't care about it. And so when you go to see your Merrill Lynch advisor or your Oppenheimer advisor or your Edward Jones advisor, whoever it may be, not that they're bad, there's many, many brilliant people out there in the Wall Street industry that do stock, bonds, mutual funds, and insurance, but they don't really care about real estate. And then you have to go put on another hat and go find your real estate guy, and all they do is badmouth your stockbroker. How do you find a balance between this, Randy? What are your thoughts?
Oh, that's great. In fact, Mark, that's great. You hit the nail on the head. Not only is your traditional, you know, financial advisor, and again, just not to name names, but whether it's a Merrill Lynch or Edward James, it doesn't matter. Not only are they not interested in talking to you about real estate investments, most of them are prohibited from giving advice to their clients in that area by the people they work for. In other words, even if they did believe in it and they did like it, they can't even talk to their clients about it because they're prohibited from doing that. Did you know that?
Wow. So they would get fired if they even said, hey, by the way, did you read Mark Kohler's book and buy your rental this year? If they said that, they could lose their job?
Well, they could not only lose their job, but they could be in violation of their contract, and they could be in violation of licensing. There could be all kinds of implications there. So, yeah, it's very difficult for, you know, the average consumer who wants to go get a, quote, financial plan to go to that financial advisor and say, look, help me with this this lifelong plan I have for myself and my family. And by the way, how do I help manage the debt I have on the mortgage for my home? I'm also interested in owning investment real estate. Can you help me, you know, coordinate all that into one big financial plan? And the answer is going to be no, I can't do that. Even if they don't disparage it, they can't help you with advice in that area.
Okay, so let's talk about it. And this is not an infomercial for you. Randy, I know you've found that balance, and that's one reason why I send a lot of clients your way. I love to talk to you about real estate and the financial products that exist out there. But you can't take every one of my listeners here, and they're scattered across the country. First financial principle here. I mean, I presume you would say everybody should have a financial advisor or a financial plan, but how do you do that and how do you find the right person to help you with financial advising and real estate? Is it just something you shouldn't even try to do? Should you just know that you're not going to find that right person, or is it possible?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult, and you know that as well, just because again, of the licensing issues and the restrictions, employment contracts, and so forth. It's very difficult to find somebody that has a platform broad enough to incorporate all those strategies into one under one roof, if you will. So I think the answer to your question is they're going to have to kind of piecemeal it together. They're going to have to go out and find the traditional financial services advisor that will be. And by the way, those get broken down further as well, because some of those advisors are only licensed, for example, in life insurance and the products that the life insurance companies sell, while others are only licensed to sell securities. So there's a breakdown there. So you may need somebody that does securities and those types of investments, somebody that's life insurance and annuities, and then you have to add to that a third party that can do real estate investments as well. And then you put the three together, and now you have a broad platform to give you the investment advice you're looking for.
Okay, so let's use an analogy here, too. I think that we need to get on the table. You know, if I go to buy real estate, I could use a realtor to help me look at all sorts of real estate, raw land, multi-unit properties, commercial, single-family homes. A realtor could help me find that type of real estate I want to do, a good realtor, right? But in the financial services world, I may not be able to have the same financial services advisor help me with mutual funds, stocks, insurance. Not everybody has licenses that you have that you've taken 25 years to get. So what type of financial advisor should the – so this is my first question. So not my first. I've already asked several. But so what type of financial advisor should the brand new – you know, I'm young. I'm getting – now, I'm going to come to different levels here. But, you know, maybe tell us kind of the progression here. If I'm new, I'm out there – young family or single, and I'm just getting my career started, what type of financial advisor should I look for? And then, you know, then as I get older, what type should I look after that? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, that's another great question. So, and this will sound a little self-serving, but I promise it's not. But first of all, I feel that you should look for independent financial advisors as opposed to the big box financial advisor, you know, the big brand name financial advisor. And the reason I favor independent financial advisors is that they're not locked into their employer's marketable products. In other words, they have the ability to go out and choose from among the best financial products available and present those to the client independently. That's the benefit of that, of now, again, working for the big brand name. Specifically, you could ask your financial advisor, are you an investment advisor representative or a registered investment advisor, RIA or IAR? Those two designations are a sign of independence. Now, it doesn't mean they absolutely are independent, but you can't be independent unless you are one of those two. Does that make
sense?
Okay,
repeat those two designations. R what?
Yes, so RIA, which is a registered investment advisor, and a IAR, which is an advisor, investment advisor representative.
Now I'm gonna join your bandwagon. You go ahead.
I was gonna say those two designations allow the advisor to be independent because they're not subject to working for a broker dealer, which virtually every other financial advisor is subject to their rules and restrictions.
Okay, and thank you for clearing and for defining that. And what I wanted to just quickly say is that I'm going to join your bandwagon. Now, I know that I may offend some of my listeners out there, and this may turn you off from ever listening to me again, but my style is I really feel – I almost got emotional. I get these little tings, you know, but I did. I really feel this is coming from my heart. I'm being a cheeseball again today. Is that I feel I'm the type of advisor for my clients – where I'm a consumer advocate. I am a Main Street guy. I signed up to be a tax attorney for the small business owner. I'm not going to go work in New York. I'm not going to work in Chicago or LA and help big Fortune 500s do reverse mergers for billions of dollars. My life is helping the small business owner, and I love the small business owner. And I feel bad that there's so many small business owners that get taken advantage of and ripped off and don't know how to set up their entity or do their tax return, and it's a minefield out there. And I feel that in the financial services world, I get scared sending my clients off to these huge brokerage houses, and I don't get referrals from Merrill Lynch advisors. So fine, hate me, I don't care. And I don't mean to pick on Merrill Lynch, I just call them Merrill Lynch because they're the biggest, yeah. You know. But I love...
Right.
What, Randy, you do. You're independent. I want to encourage all my clients to find an advisor that has the RIA or IAR designation so that you can talk about real estate for crying out loud. You can talk about education plans for my kids. You can do it all. And it doesn't have to be expensive. It just, you're going to save people 10 times what they spend. And I'm sorry, this interview is from you, Randy, but you just got me started here, but I love what you said.
Go, Mark, go.
It's that, you know, I just love this independent. Okay, so let me ask this then. So I got to get back to you because this is about you today. So if
sure.
I go out and find an independent advisor such as yourself, how should I approach that? Are you going to charge me per transaction? Are you going to give me a plan? Can I pay you to do a plan for me? What's the best way people should approach a financial advisor?
Yeah, that's another great question. So you know, the approach has to be appropriate for the person, meaning somebody that, say, in their late 60s, mid-70s, that's either about to or has already retired, is going to have a completely different set of circumstances than somebody in their, say, late 30s, mid-40s, right? And so often when people come to me, for example, I'm a comprehensive financial planner. I can develop a lifelong financial plan for clients, but it's a financial commitment, you know, to pay for the plan, and it's a time commitment for both parties. Meaning, I'm committing to stick with them and be there for them the rest of their life, and vice versa. Some people need that. Some people's financial situations are more complex, and so that's appropriate. On the other hand, you might have somebody that, you know, maybe they're younger in life, maybe they own, you know, like one piece of rental property, and they're married, they have a couple kids, they got a great job, and really they just need a couple hours of getting some guidance and some goals and objectives set up, and that's enough. And then you can set them down the road and, you know, check back in as needed, but they don't really need that comprehensive financial plan. So the answer to your question is, you know, in terms of my services, is A, we either sign you up as a, you know, full planning, kind of a retainer type situation, or we just sit down and we spend a couple hours, billable hours, and then, and, you know, get you squared away. Whatever's appropriate, that's the right answer.
Okay. So the nice thing, again, what I'm hearing you say is that, again, because you're independent, you can tailor your pricing almost to the client as to what their needs are. If they just need a little 401k
Absolutely.
Or an IRA set up, boom, set up. If they need a full plan and they've got several million dollars of assets, you can design that as well.
It has to be client appropriate, you know, and that's the way it should be. You shouldn't become to like, here's my canned thing, and this is what we always charge, and this is how we do it, and, you know, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, how can everybody's lives is individual and their situations are specific? You need to design a plan that works and is appropriate for them.
Okay, so let's go to the next step here. So let's say I find an advisor. That's helping me out with a comprehensive plan that looks at not only my portfolio of investments in Wall Street, but also my real estate. They're looking at the big plan. Here's a question. I just got this via email from a listener right now. They said, Mr.
Okay.
Lupke, what is the allocation of assets that the average person should have between real estate and financial products? Whew, that's a tough one.
Okay.
I guess that's client
well,
specific
sort-
too, or
Yeah, it is, as I said, that's sort of a tough question, but it really, again, boils down to what's appropriate. You know, the thing with investment real estate is, although on the tax side, you call it a passive investment, it's got to be the most actively involved passive investment out there. Would you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. You call
yeah.
it passive,
yeah.
but it takes
yeah,
active.
I mean,
there's no, like, stocks.
Yeah, it's not like you can just buy it and put it on the shelf and come back and look at it 10 years later. The point is that not all people, even though real estate is a great investment, it's not going to be appropriate for all people. Maybe they don't have the time. Maybe they don't have the, you know, the temperament. Maybe they don't have, you know, whatever it takes to be a successful landlord. They don't have that. So really, to answer that caller's question is, It depends on where you are in life, what you have in terms of income and assets to back you up, and then again, you know, what feels good to you, and then you can get the right mix. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Don't hold back on me here. You call me out. What do you think of my admonition that I tell people buy one rental a year? Is that good? Am I crazy, or what do you think?
Well, no, I think it's a great admonition, and you know, the one thing that Well, there's many things that you do very well, but one of the things that you do is you just get people to do something. You get them to get going. You get them to, you know, one a year. You know, that's great, because if you think about it, every one of these things they buy is the golden goose that continues to lay eggs, not only for the life of the person that bought it, but potentially for the lives of their children and grandchildren and so on down the line. So, again, I'm a big advocate of real estate. You know that. I own it.
I've got to ask this. Hold it. Did I just hear a stockbroker say that you're a huge advocate for real estate? Wow.
Yeah, you heard an independent financial advisor, RIA.
Wow. Okay. Now, should everybody have an IRA or a 401k? What do you think?
And this I can be, you know, general, because the idea is we have to do things to help mitigate our taxes. And frankly, you know, there's not a lot of things available, a lot of tools available for us to work with. IRAs and 401ks are simple, and at least they allow us to get 100-cent dollars. And what I mean by that is dollars that we earn that we don't have to pay taxes on today. It allows those dollars, 100-cent dollars, to be invested, and it allows the returns on those investments to grow and compound without being taxed as well. So, yeah, I'm a huge advocate for that as well. The question is, what do you own as investments inside of those IRA and 401k boxes?
Very good. Now, if we're advocating a well-balanced portfolio of standard financial investments, which one might call stocks, bonds, mutual funds, insurance as well, and also real estate, we're trying to find that balance. How do you help your clients save for the future? Let's just talk general good financial planning basics here. We're Americans.
Sure.
We suck saving generally, I think. I don't know. I mean, how do you help your clients get a future retirement? What do you tell your people they got to be doing?
Okay, so it's really a four-step process, and it begins with eliminating all of what I call reductive debt. There's two kinds of debt, Mark. There's what I call reductive debt and productive debt. So let's kind of go off on that tangent for a moment. Reductive debt is debt you take on generally to buy things that you either consume or depreciate in value. So, you know, they tend to be like car loans, maybe credit card debt, you know, things that you're going to consume are going to go down in value. And the problem with reductive debt is not only is it generally more expensive debt, you know, higher interest rates are being charged, but the payments on those on that type of debt get in the way of your savings. So we got to get that out of the way. We got to eliminate all the reductive debt. And it's sad but true. Some clients come to me and they have credit card debt, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $100,000 at 24-30% interest. And then they have money sitting in a 401k plan, you know, that's earning, you know, maybe 6 or 7%. That doesn't make any sense. You need to eliminate the debt. So that's step one. Okay. Step two is you have to save to create a substantial amount of liquid cash reserves. Okay. Now, liquid cash reserves, by definition, are monies that are going to be bulletproof. They're going to be put in very safe places, you know, whether it's, you know, bank, money market, whatever. And so, therefore, it's not going to have a high rate of return. But it's those cash reserves that are going to do two things for us. One, they're going to protect you when things go wrong, when the bad stuff happens in life. And two, they're going to provide you with cash to take advantage of opportunities when they present themselves as well. So I'm not talking about having like, you know, like 1 month or 2 months worth of cash in the bank. I'm talking about having 4, 5, 6, 12 months, maybe $100,000 or more of liquid reserves to protect you and to take advantage of opportunities when they present themselves. Okay?
Okay. Now, when we talk about your step two, I've often been taught that the only way to get there is to do one of two things. And usually a combination of both. One, I need to either to make more money or I need to reduce my living expenses so that I can create that cash reserve. And for some people early on, I would presume that investing in their education is good use of their money to hopefully create that future income at a higher level. But living within our means, gosh, that's got to be so important. And living below our means, in a sense. I mean, we've got to, if we're going to create a cash reserve, we've got to be more frugal. We're not that frugal of a nation. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, if I'm going to try to create a cash reserve, I got to do something to create it.
You're absolutely right. And this is the concept called delayed gratification. You know, sometimes we have to put off something that we'd like to have today till tomorrow because it'll be better for us. You know, what you're just saying about living below your means, there was a book published, I think it was back in 1923, and it's a book I give to my clients very often. It's called The Richest Man in Babylon by George S. Clason. Have you ever heard of that book?
Yes, I have. I've read it, yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like Financial Planning 101. I'd recommend it for everybody to read. It's easy. It's a short book. But the idea is that you have to spend less than you make. If you don't do that, you're never going to be able to get anywhere in terms of financial independence. And so, yeah, I love the idea of investing in things and making more money on my money, but I have to have my clients get out of debt first, and then I have to have them save to build that substantial liquid assets before we can, you know, get to step 3 and 4. Have to do that.
No, I love it. And thanks for letting me talk about that tangent for a moment. But, you know, when people say off the cuff, oh, you need to have a cash reserve, a lot of us, we kind of stress out. We're like, what? I'm living month to month. How in the heck am I supposed to create a cash reserve? Well, make more money or spend less money or do a little of both. And it's tough. I mean, I'm out there with all of you out there listening today. My wife and I, we have the same struggle every month, you know, trying to save, buy our rental every year, and fund our HSA, fund our 401k. It's tough. At any income level, it is tough for everybody out there to create that reserve. Well, anyway, Randy,
yeah.
What's number three? Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. No, that's okay. So, yeah, I so agree with you, and it's not fun to save money that makes you no money, but it's even less fun to find yourself in a situation where something happens and you don't have the money to take care of it. You got to have that rainy day money. And again, that's the negative side. And the positive side is if you have cash on hand, when opportunities come along, you can take advantage of them. And you can do it quickly because you have that nimbleness. So it's important to have that. And this is, again, I think, an area where a lot of financial advisors drop the ball, because I don't make any money from having my clients have significant reserves. And so, you know, I want you to have money under management. That's how I get paid. But truly, that's being selfish. The best thing in the best interest of the clients is to get that nest egg, that reserve, that place set up for them to protect them and take advantage of things when they present themselves. So number three. We got to protect the things that we already have, right? We need to optimize them, and we need to do things to mitigate taxes. So that's a lot in one third step, if you will. But the point is that as you start accumulating assets, unfortunately, people will try and take them from you, right? And so we got to do things to make them safe, to protect them, and this is again where the HSA comes in, where the 401k so potentially comes in. It's just, let's optimize the assets you have. We'll get those all dialed in so they're doing what they should do. Again, with investments, you can't just, you know, stick it all under a mattress. That doesn't get you anywhere. You lose money just from inflation. You got to put your money to work. That's from Richest Man in Babylon too, putting your money to work. That's one of the quotes they talk about. So that would be step three. And then step four
Randy, before you go to number four, let me just summarize there, if I could. Just what I took from that was save, optimize, and protect. There's just kind of, if you're going to create a cash reserve,
that's it.
It's save taxes, optimize, and protect. And
protect. That's your step three. So let's take all the stuff you have you already got going, and let's protect it. Let's optimize it, put it to work in an acceptable way, and make sure we're being tax efficient. That's what we do in step three.
Okay.
Got now it. We're on step
okay, go
four.
Ahead. Sorry. All right. You go for it.
Step four is real simple. Now we save and invest for long-term plans and goals. Now we get to save and invest. And the irony is most people jump to step four before they've even taken care of step one.
Okay.
They, Right. They go to work for their employer. They know they need to retire someday. They know that it's a good thing to save and invest. They enroll in the 401k plan, so they put money away, which is a good thing. But then they're sitting there with these credit card bills. So they're making 7% on their 401k, hopefully, but they're paying 20% on their credit card debt. Not a good financial plan.
Good. Okay. Now, I've got a few comments here on the chat window. I want to bring up on this. Brandy, this has been very enlightening, good stuff. Is several comments.
I hope it's another people's opinion, good stuff.
Yeah. No, it is. Neil on the line says, this is a favorite book of mine. I give it a gift to family. I wish they read it. That's Richest Man of Babylon. We've got a couple links right there on the chat window for that. Anybody can obviously get a copy by going to Amazon, of course. I just thought about this. You know what I'm going to do? I just made a personal commitment to myself. I wrote it down here on a post-it, frankly. I'm going to have all my teenagers read Richest Man of Babylon, and then if they read it, they can go to dinner with me this weekend, and I'll take them somewhere nice for dinner. But they have to read Richest Man of Babylon, and we'll talk about it at dinner. I'm going to do it. That's my goal this week. Boom.
You know,
just made it.
It's funny, Mark. When my kids were graduating from high school, you know, you got to give them these high school graduation presents, and I gave every one of my kids' friends a copy of The Richest Man in Babylon with a $100 bill and a spreadsheet showing them how they could have $1 million if they would save and invest by the time they're 45 years old.
I love it. I've got a lot of my son, who's a senior right now and graduated, all of his friends are floating around the house here, and maybe I'll do that. I'll put a bundle together of two or three good books. And we got another comment on the chat line, Wealthy Barber. Now, I've got to be honest, I have not read The Wealthy Barber, and I'd like to. I've heard so many good things about it. In fact, I've had people tell me that I've taken quotes from it, because there's so many good quotes out there about Wealthy Barber, but I need to read that as well. Another comment on the line is, paying off the credit card is a must. A question on via email I got here too, Randy. We only have a few minutes left here, but quickly, someone said, Randy, yeah, did I hear you correctly to pay off a credit card before investing in your retirement?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Again, just from the pure math perspective, it doesn't make sense to try and earn 7% when you're paying 24% or 30% interest on a credit card. That doesn't make sense. The second thing is that the credit card payment, you need to eliminate it and take that money that you were paying for the credit card, and that needs to go to your retirement. And there's lots of methods to do this. I'm a advocate of snowballing. You've heard of that one before, Mark? You know what that is?
I've got several things that come to mind, but yes, I'll let you explain it for us, or I'll screw it up.
Well, the idea is this. Let's just keep it simple. Say you have three credit cards, and the minimum payments on those cards, because that's another thing, by the way. The credit card companies know that if they can charge you a minimum payment of like 2 or 3% of the balance, that they can just rake up tons and tons of interest from you. It takes like 20 to 25 years to pay off the charge you have today if you always make the minimum payments. So you can't do that. I mean, you just can't do that. So you have to sit down and you go, okay, I'm going to take, say, 20% of my earnings and 20% or 25% or whatever we can, you know, figure out to save, and I'm going to dedicate that, let's keep it 20%, that 20% towards paying off all my credit cards until they're gone. And so then what's snowballing? Snowballing, basically, you look at the one with the least balance, the smallest balance, irrespective of interest rates. Interest rates don't matter at this point. And you say, I'm going to pay, let's say that 20% represents $400. So I'm going to take $400 every month, and I'm going to pay off that credit card with that balance until it's gone. And let's say that the minimum payment is $25. So I'm paying the $25 plus $400, that credit card goes away. Now I start attacking the next credit card, and let's say that that credit card minimum payment is $50. So I'm going to take the $400 I was already paying, I'm going to take the $25 I paid on the old card, plus the $50 I'm required to pay, so $475 goes and just attacks that card until it's gone. And you keep doing that, rolling up, snowballing up. Yes.
Okay, and I love it, and I'm gonna I've got to cut you off here because the snowball's starting here. And no, I love what you're saying, and it just starts to roll, and you can pay off these credit cards faster. But I've got to say this: we only got 45 seconds left. Randy, give us your website. Throw it out there.
Okay, it is www.lifetimeparadigm.com. Lifetime, L-I-F-E-T-I-M-E, paradigm, P-A-R-A-D-I-G-M.com.
And there's a ton of info on that website. I love it. And I hope that people can get out and continue to learn from you. You're an incredible educator. And we're grateful to have you here on the show today. It's been awesome. Randy, thanks for the lives you're changing and helping people out there. I love it.
Mark, thanks for having me on the show. And really, it's always fun and a pleasure. Thanks for doing good work you do.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Randy. We'll have you back. Folks, Randy loves you.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.